I'd like to welcome author Mark Lamster, whose recently released book, The Man in the Glass House, is generating much conversation in the modern design circles across the country. Mark is the architecture critic for the Dallas Morning News, a professor of architecture at the University of Texas at Arlington, and a 2017 Loeb Fellow of the Harvard Graduate School of Design. The work is a biography of renowned mid-century architect Philip Johnson, who's been described as brilliant and iconoclastic, but prickly and controversial. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Some of our listeners may not be familiar with Philip Johnson, his amazing body of work. Could you take a moment and talk about Johnson's body of work?
Well, they might be familiar with his face. He was a regular on Charlie Rose when Charlie Rose still had a TV show. He was that sort of architect of the imagination, the man in those owl-framed glasses with a quip for every occasion, quite charming gentleman. And his career spanned most of the 20th century. It began as a curator. As a young man, he was the founding architectural curator of the Museum of Modern Art. In that position, he sort of introduced European modernism to the American public. And he later became an architect and had a catalog of tremendously influential buildings. His own glass house that he built for himself, one of his most famous iconic designs, but also a series of other controversial buildings, some great, some terrible, probably most famously the AT&T Tower in New York, the sort of Chippendale-capped grandfather clock-style skyscraper for AT&T on Madison Avenue.
You've described Johnson as a man of deep paradoxes. Tell us about that.
Well, if Johnson had any kind of genius, it was to occupy the poles of any position at the same time. So he was a man who lived in a glass house who liked to throw stones. He was a figure of the establishment, but he was also someone who liked to cause controversy at all times and sort of ruffle feathers wherever he could. He lived a life of intellectualism, but claimed to be a populist. He had a long career as an anti-Semite and as a Nazi sympathizer, and then he went on to support many Jewish architects, build a synagogue, and in fact build a nuclear facility for the Israeli state. He was a modernist. He introduced the idea of modernism, European glass box modernism, a Mises modernism to the United States, really. And then he rejected it. He threw it away and moved towards postmodernism and sort of became the figurehead of that movement. So he was always very controversial and loved to be a sort of player in the spotlight, creating trouble at any time.
Johnson is perhaps known best for his glass house located in New Canaan, Connecticut, as evidenced by the title of your book. Tell our listeners about the glass house.
Well, it's just a simple glass box with a steel frame, and Johnson opened it as his house in 1949. And it was immediately a sensation with the public because people were dying to know if someone could live in just a simple glass box with no rooms open to the public. And here was Johnson, this gay man living out in a glass box. And of course, he was not out at that time, but he was still a man living in a box in a little aquarium that you could see from the street in very staid New Canaan, a town of colonials and white picket fences. And this was just a tremendous publicity coup for him that brought him tremendous attention. And people were dying to know if he could live in it. And then a woman famously came visiting one day and said, "I don't think I could live in this kind of house." And he said, "Well, ma'am, I haven't asked you to." And so he was quite funny about it and quite charming. But it was also controversial among architects. The idea for the house was actually derived from Mises, from a glass house that Mises had designed. And Johnson had recently curated an exhibition on Mises. But Mises' house, although it was designed, it had not been built yet. So Johnson got his glass house built before the Mises house that inspired it was built. And that angered Mises no end. He compared Johnson's house to a hot dog stand. He thought it was a misunderstanding of his ideas, and that unlike Mises' house, Johnson's house is very classical in its symmetry and attached to the ground, like growing out of the ground, as opposed to being pulled up off it as Mies was. So Johnson was very much a part of nature. So on this estate that Johnson had purchased for himself and developed for the rest of his life, building follies and clearing land, clearing trees, clearing more trees, clearing more and more trees, always angering the neighbors whenever he knocks down trees to create this sort of dream landscape for himself apart from the world.
You mentioned Mies, and of course you're referring to Mies van der Rohe. I'm curious about their relationship. How did they meet? And tell us a little bit about their relationship.
They had a feisty relationship. They met when Johnson was a young man as a curator touring around Germany, and Mies was at the Bauhaus. Johnson helped reestablish Mies in the United States with the rise of the Nazis and his need to escape. And then Johnson curated the first really influential show of Mies's work that established Mies in the United States in 1947, a tremendously influential exhibition at the Museum of Modern Art. And following that, Mies sort of felt a little bit beholden to him. And when it came time to build the Seagram Building, Johnson was tasked by Phyllis Lambert, who was the heir of Samuel Bronfman, who was the chairman of the Seagram Company. So his daughter was Phyllis Lambert. And she had seen the original plans for a Seagram Building by different architects and thought it was a disaster. So she wanted to get a great architect for it. And who could help her find one but Philip Johnson from MoMA. So together they toured looking for architects, and he basically pointed her towards Mies, who was her choice in any event. He helps Mies get this commission for the Seagram Building. And then because Mies has to be in Chicago, Mies asked Johnson to cooperate with him on the building and be his partner in that building. So, of course, the Seagram Building, I think many consider it the greatest modernist tower ever built, a sort of iconic building. And Johnson is sort of a partner with Mies on it and doesn't get enough credit for his designs for that building, the most prominent of which is the Four Seasons restaurant, where the Power Lunch was born on this extraordinary modern restaurant, which was the most expensive restaurant ever designed to that point, really introduced seasonal modern cuisine to the American public in this extraordinary modern setting. The Four Seasons has recently reopened and closed, and there's been all kinds of mishigas about it, but that's a different story.
Mark, it's a most fascinating book, and it's certainly a most fascinating subject matter. I'd like to thank our guest this evening, author and journalist Mark Lamster, who has brilliantly captured the essence of mid-century architect Philip Johnson. Thanks again, Mark.
Thank you so much for having me.
For more information on this terrific book and the life of Philip Johnson, please visit our website, wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, this is Stuart Holman.